podcast that you never made a deal with. We're also the show that didn't make the Kessel Run in 12 parsecs, but we do provide an Asian perspective into the galaxy far, far away. I'm your host, Bria, and with me are my co-hosts, Brian and Jay.
Hello.
Hello.
On today's episode, we're talking about all things Rostico, so sit back and enjoy the Kanji cast. Speaking of which, hey, we're back. Finally. Sorry it's been a little while. There was, you know, life happening. The plague occurred, which don't get the flu this year, guys. Just don't do it.
I had the flu the first week of January, and it about killed me.
Oh, I think it killed most of us.
God.
But yeah, good news is we're back. And since we last did our little podcast, something happened in the Star Wars universe. Obviously, talking about the Battlefront DLC. No, I thought we were talking about the Last Jedi. So I thought we were talking about our first episode since we've seen the movie. Quick thoughts. Did you like it?
Yes, it was great. Let's go see it again.
Okay. Podcast over. Let's go.
Yep. Let's all leave. Now, it was a field trip, everybody. It was one that I appreciated more the more times I watched it because there is a lot to absorb.
What viewing number are you guys up to?
5, I think.
I'm at 9.
6.
Unfortunately,
we don't have a problem, right?
Unfortunately, it has dropped out of playing at the theater by us, so we're probably done until we go on a boat next week.
Oh, no. Not the boat.
Yeah, the boat. The boat.
Well, anyways, all right. So shall we get started with the, I would say that, and then there's this, which is supposed to be our, hey, here's some news segment, but has turned into our, really, guys? Really? This happened?
And this, so, this month's is extra special.
Yeah, who wants to take this one?
I'll read it. Disney admits to darkening extras' skin for the live-action Aladdin. Wow.
And wasn't there explanation because we couldn't find people with the right skills that met the description they were looking for?
Yeah, they couldn't find stunt
actors. Yeah, I hear that's super hard to do in England.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, come on.
There is no one talented.
You're Disney.
There's no talented ethnic actors in London.
Yeah.
None.
You're Disney. You have all the financial resources in the universe. You cast a wider net and go find them.
Yeah. This is unfortunate.
Yeah, that's I just don't know what to think about this live-action Aladdin, because it's always seemed like it's a step and a half away from gigantic controversy.
Or right in the middle of controversy.
Yeah. If it's not in the middle of it, it's about to step in it again. I don't know. I'm mostly just glad they didn't cast white people to play the leads.
Which, honestly, if that's our bar for you didn't screw up, we have some problems.
I think, last night the movie Black Panther premiered, and that's, you know, a case, from what I hear, of people doing it well. So the bar is well and truly moved, and Disney doesn't get any props anymore for, you know, not whitewashing the cast.
You didn't whitewash. We're not praising you for that. You shouldn't have been for eons. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's not a hard... not a hard thing not to do.
So, but yes.
Anyways, on to happier news, to Jay's Art Corner, which isn't, in fact, going to be a recurring section now that Jay has finally admitted he agreed to do it live on the podcast. So, Jay, what do you have for us this month?
All right. So, today on Jay's Art Corner, I'm still shocked that this is a thing.
You made a deal with Kanji Cast, man.
Let's discuss the Tico Sisters pendant. It's the item of jewelry we first noticed the beginning sequence of The Last Jedi that Paige Tico is wearing just before her unfortunate demise. And then we see Rose Tico has the exact same pendant, and it plays a key role in the movie. Now, some background on this pendant. According to the movie's visual dictionary or visual guide, it's an ensign of the Odamok system, which is, I guess, where the Tico sisters come from, representing the planet Haze Minor, made of Hazian smelt, a conductor, which is the plot point in the movie that the pendant plays a role in, and it's paired with Paige's pendant, so it's meant to be the exact same design, a duplicate, a clone. The art book discusses how they developed the pendant, and says they originally designed it as a pair of linking pendants that would actually fit together. But as the story progressed, they turned it into a paired set instead. And the artbook actually shows us a bunch of different iterations of the pendant. It started out looking pretty close to what we got, a sort of curved yin-yang theme. Then it shifted into a rebel symbol that broke in half and attached together, a few Celtic-inspired designs, and then finally, the final design ended up keeping that yin-yang symbolism but added that Celtic design into it. And instead of discussing the background and art of the pendant, I thought I'd ask my fellow hosts what you think of the pendant and what you think it says about Rose and her sister.
The first thing I think is, why isn't it available to purchase yet?
You stole my line.
But no, I really love the piece. It's just it's really beautifully well designed. There's one of the props over at Disney's Hollywood Studios at the Star Wars launch bay. You can take a close up look at, and it's a really universe fitting pretty design. And my wife wants to buy one. I don't know why they're not available yet.
It feels like they really dropped the ball on a lot of the jewelry, given that Rian Johnson made it such a point to include more space jewelry. I'm like, well, why don't you have it available so we can buy it? But anyways, because I want one too. But actually, I found it really interesting what you said about, because I haven't read the art book, but about there being some Celtic inspired designs, because we have a question a little bit further down where someone was asking us about Rose possibly being, people being worried that Rose might be too much of a stereotype. And to me, I think it's interesting that they went to Celtic inspiration for the pendants, which kind of also says to me that they might have been looking at those, at the design for that before they cast Kelly Marie Tran. And I kind of think it's really neat to me, the idea that they just went for this sort of culture and then they took, you know, added in the yin yang to that.
Yeah, I think you're actually right, because as the art book is kind of chronologically designed, and I'm pretty sure they're talking about developing the pendant before they had the casting for Kelly Marie Tran figured out, because as you go through, you know, Rose actually starts, some of the concept artists have a white person as Rose, and then as it goes further, you can see the point at which Kelly Marie Tran is cast, and then you can actually see her in the design. So I think they must have come up with the yin-yang symbolism for the sisters even before they decided that, or even before they knew that it would be an Asian actress playing her.
That's really neat. I like it. It makes Rose feel more universal in a way.
And then one final question from me. I haven't read either Cobalt Squadron or Bomber Command yet. I need to get on that. But do either of those books say anything about their pendants?
Yes. Don't ask me what. Hold on. Let me grab my copy of Bomber Command.
I am way behind on reading, so I cannot provide input on this one yet.
Yeah. Actually, yeah, her pendant is on the back of Bomber Command. And let me... Should I have read the show notes before we started? Probably. Am I going to page through this right
that's
now?
That's no fun. Yeah. Winging it is Let's so much see. Better.
Keepsakes from our parents. Medallions of hazy and gold. And let him take my medallion off is in the ball turret. Which, you guys, you really need to read Bomber Command.
That's the
Jason Fry knocked it out of the park with this, and it made me like love Paige and want to just hug her even more.
I've heard so many good things about it. I need to get my hands on it.
Is there anything Jason Fry hasn't knocked out of the park?
It looks like they don't go into it in too much more detail, or at least not that I'm seeing. Oh, wait, hold on. No, hold on. So it actually says, let's see, our father's parents hadn't been here very long when they made the first mineral strike, and it was a lucky one, gold smelt. Grandpa Storm and Grandma Etta celebrated by striking the snow grate medallions that Rose and I still wear.
Oh, wow. So it has deep family significance for them.
Yeah. Yeah. They're grandparents.
Love it.
And I know the snow grape is another thing that ties in to both the and for the characters in both of the books. But yeah, no, I completely missed that the first time.
Perfect.
Yeah.
The more so that's you that. Know.
Well, I guess you kind of got off easy this time, Jay, because it gave you there's a really obvious choice for your art corner.
Yeah, and honestly, you know, when I was thinking about what to pick, I thought, you know, this was not only specifically associated with Rose, but it was a nice, even before we knew anything about the background or what the pendant was made of, just in the movie, it's this great visual tool. We can see Paige holding it and we see Rose holding it, and it tells you a lot about their relationship. just in the way they interact and they think about the pendant. So easy choice.
Awesome. Well, shall we dive right into our discussion of Rose then?
I believe it's time. Yes.
It is time. Okay. So what do you guys remember what your first reaction was when you heard that Kelly Marie Tran was cast and had a major role in the movie?
Unadulterated glee.
I wasn't entirely sure how to respond because I was actually just really surprised.
I was at a gas station with my friend Lynn, who is Vietnamese, and she and I think I was scrolling through Twitter and I saw it, and I think we both had to read it for a minute, and then we just sort of freaked out because we're like, oh my God, we get to see ourselves in a Star Wars. But I also wasn't sure what to think either, but especially because I don't think anyone had ever really heard of her before. So it was neat to hear that this, for lack of a better term, like no one actress, like or an unknown actress, there we go, that's the word I'm looking for, had been cast and it was going to be an Asian woman. So what sort of character did we originally think she might be, or rather, what kind of character did you guys hope she was going to be?
So I had no inkling that she was going to have such a major role in the movie. And we didn't get that until like, what, Celebration, right? So at the beginning, I was just wondering if she was just going to be an extra or maybe another rebel officer or, you know, someone in the background, but not really a major character. Maybe someone we'd get a short story about later on or something like that.
Yeah, for me, I didn't want to get my hopes up that it would be anything more than like the role Connix had in The Last Jedi. I just could not let myself get too hype because if it wasn't as hyped as I wanted it to be, I would have been disappointed.
So how did that change for you guys at Celebration?
Well, first of all, standing next to you when we heard about her role was that was really interesting.
Do continue, Jay. Define interesting for me.
I mean, what was it, like a shriek of glee or I don't even know how to describe it. You were just so emotional. And I think that hit me harder because, we've talked about Asian American representation on this program before and how, you know, East Asian and South Asian has, you know, degrees of differences. And so I wasn't hit as hard as you were, perhaps. And that was, I think, what affected me most was seeing you as an East Asian woman, and how that affected you was really how I engaged with the character and getting to see how much it meant for you.
Aw. Did I tell you the random guy in front of us turned around afterwards and asked me, like, why I cared?
Dear God, like, really?
Yeah, he was like, do you know her from some other show? I'm like, no! She's Asian! I am too!
Wow.
Yeah. So what about you, Brian? What was your initial reaction at Celebration?
This is going to sound bad, but it was numbness, just because I was shocked that it appeared she was going to have this important role in the film, and my brain blue screened of death and I couldn't process it. It took me like an hour to just kind of slowly reboot and churn it all through my head. And then I freaked the hell out.
And it didn't help, probably, that Kelly was so adorable and, like, excited and the cutest thing when she was on stage and with Mark and everything. And, oh.
I know. Just, we all instantly fell in love with Kelly Marie Tran at that moment.
How can people not love Kelly Marie Tran? I don't understand them.
She's just so pure, and her reactions are so much like she is us and we are her in certain ways.
Oh, it is so true. Like her just exuberance for everything in being in Star Wars, like the stories that came out later on about how she'd visit like the props department and different things and just want to absorb everything about the process because she was so excited to be there. Like I can see myself, you know, wanting to do that. Like I can't believe that she's in Star Wars, but she's still a massive fan as well and engaging with it that way.
Yeah, I think she's actually even more of a Harry Potter fan than she is a Star Wars. I think I read something where it said that she wasn't really a Star Wars person before she got cast, but she's like just that's just what the kind of person she is, where she wants to see everything and love and embrace like every last part of the experience, and no one told her that she wasn't supposed to do that sort of stuff, so she was like, yeah, whatever. I'm gonna go play in the creature shop today.
Yeah, she strikes me.
I never would have guessed that she wasn't a lifelong Star Wars fan because it just seemed like that. Wow.
Yeah, yeah, she strikes me as someone that is very much from the school of fandom.
Well, Harry Potter. She's about our age. She grew up just like we did. Well, not Jay, but she grew up like you and I did, Brian, with her Harry Potter love.
Yes, correct.
I had something I was going to ask you guys about, Kelly. I lost it.
I'm sure it'll come back as we proceed.
Probably. I have a note in here that talked about how she's a delight who must be protected later on. So we'll get back to her. But let's talk about her in The Last Jedi. So we first meet Rose, and she's sitting in the depths of the ship crying because she just lost her sister. And then Finn appears. And yeah. So, you know, she's lost her sister, and then she sees someone who she thinks is this big hero, except, oh, wait, he's actually trying to desert the fleet that her sister just died protecting. So how did you guys feel like when we first saw her on screen, or like what did you think of her introduction?
So I've seen some criticisms where people say that she is too stereotypically fangirlish. But for me, I thought it was a very clever bait and switch and trope subversion because, yeah, there's the setup there. And then she stuns Finn and spends the rest of the movie going, are you kidding me?
Actually, and I liked her original like shock at seeing Finn, because one, not only does that help her sort of act as more of an audience stand-in, because you know any one of us who saw someone like you know a Star Wars a famous hero might react in that way. It made her seem more real, but then also it grounded her role as her character, because she wasn't supposed to be a famous pilot or a famous Jedi. She was you know in maintenance, and even though she's initially like completely head over, you know, not head over heels, she's completely just dumbstruck when she sees him. She gets down to business and she is able to carry her own weight, even though she, you know, this is her first time being a hero.
Yeah. There was a moment that kind of stood out to me the last time I saw it, when she comes up with a plan, or they come up with a plan rather, for how to possibly stop the tracker. And there's a moment where they're talking to Poe, and they're explaining it. And Poe does is really adorable. Okay, try again, but slower. Just try it again. And she goes to say something, and then Finn kind of steps in front of her and cuts her off and sort of explains it more. And then Poe asks another follow-up question. And then I like there's a point where Rose kind of asserts herself a little bit more with answering it. And I thought that was a nice little character moment for her.
Yeah, I noticed that too, because it's just a very subtle thing to show that she is not a pushover, despite being in this room and in this film with these big damn heroes.
Yeah, it's like she's, you know, she's putting herself back in, literally into the narrative, by making sure that she still has a role in the discussion and in the plan.
And had the plan worked, she would have been pretty darn key to it. Like, there's no way anyone could have pulled that. Well, not that they did pull it off. But sorry, spoilers. But there's no way that they could have pulled off the plan if she hadn't been willing to do it. Although I did notice, I was like, guys, you kind of really should have come up with slightly more of a plan for how to get on the ship before you took the plan to Poe.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's that might have been wise.
Yeah. So, okay, so then they talk to Maz, and Maz is, go find the Master Code Breaker, who is apparently very talented in ways that are not speakable on this podcast, likely. So they get sent to Canto Bight. I think, Brian, this is where you and I shut up for a minute and let Jay talk.
Yeah, I'm going to kick heels up on the
Canto Bight is obviously the best part of the movie, but this is not the Canto Bight podcast, so I'll refrain from my discussion of the wonderfulness of that setting and their outfits. And instead, I'll talk about how I thought Canto Bight was actually pretty important to their character arc. Specifically,
but Jay, it has the worst people in the galaxy.
I think she was being sarcastic, and she actually meant the best people in the galaxy. That's my preferred take.
Brian, tiebreaker.
Worst.
Don't be envious. It's unbecoming. Canto Bight is wonderful.
I'm sorry. Continue.
So the art book was talking about the Canto Bight plotline, and it was interesting because the original idea, first of all, was to send Finn and Poe there and have sort of like a bro trip over there. And they realized that they didn't want to do that because the quips and dialogue they were doing back and forth could have been interchangeable and spoken by any one of them, and it did nothing for either character. So they came up with the character of Rose. And they were originally going to have this big heist with the code breaker and get caught and arrested, and then they'd have a DJ plot line later. And they cut all that other stuff, despite cutting a great tuxedo shopping scene, which I'm bitter about. But they still made the right call, because the fact that they got arrested earlier and interacted with DJ more gave Rose a plan to be more central to this plot line, right? Like, she got to talk to Finn about how overrated she thought Cannobite was, and how Finn had to see past the superficial, and how Finn had to pick a side, and how the Fathiers and that whole chase sequence actually got to show Finn concretely what taking a stand could do, and how Rose got to open Finn's eyes and did the same thing with the kids too when she showed them that ring. And that was actually important to the story because it progressed Finn's character arc, and Rose got to be the person who did it. And so the folks who sort of criticize Cantobite as not really having a role in the movie are missing that this is what brings Finn not just to the resistance, but to believing in the resistance.
So as you're talking, it kind of makes me think of something. I've seen some people criticize Rose's role as being mostly to shove Finn on his character journey. So do you think that, given what you just said, that that's a valid criticism, or what?
So I do hear that criticism, and I was kind of thinking that in my head as I was talking too. But the reason I don't think that she's there just for Finn's arc is because I think one of the larger themes of this movie is dealing with failure and how you react with the consequences of it. And something I've said on social media is that, from my perspective, every character in this movie has a failure moment where they learn from it, except for Rose. Even though she's new to the saga and new to Star Wars, she's the one person that's sort of unwavering in her beliefs. And so she's kind of almost like a pivot point in the movie where her position never changes and she's sort of always right going through the course of the movie.
Brian, what's your take on Cantobite?
This is actually a subplot that has grown on me each time I've watched it. I didn't really like it at first. I was one of the people who did feel like it was out of place. But then when you start recontextualizing it, as Jay said, you start seeing, oh yeah, this is why this subplot is here. And I will say I do think that this is more than just a vehicle of growth for Finn. And I do think that it's more than that Rose exists more than just to be a catalyst for Finn's growth, because at the beginning of Cantobite to the end of the film, Rose is a different person who has had a very defined arc along the way. So I don't necessarily agree with the school of thought that Rose only exists to be a catalyst for Finn's growth.
To me, I thought the whole Cantobite sequence was worth it entirely for her laughter and smile of pure glee as they row the Fathiers out.
Stop enjoying this!
Stop enjoying this! No! It just makes me so happy every single time. I'll admit that Cantobite wasn't necessarily my favorite sequence the first time or two that I saw it, because I guess I just expected it to be more. Because they built it up so much in the promotional material, and then there was an entire book about it where I was like, oh, this is going to be this big thing. And not to sound like Jay, but I was expecting a little bit more fancy. Like, you're going to take me to the fanciest casino in the galaxy with, you know, the worst people. Well, give me some more fancy dresses and for a little bit longer. But I can't believe those words just came out of my mouth.
Yeah, I mean,
Jay, what have you done to me?
Hey, listen, if there's a 30-minute cut Cantobite sequence, I think we'll all be happy.
I can't even lie and say that I don't want to just run around the casino. I want to steal that really fancy looking fan. And Rose is probably very disappointed in me right now.
Yeah.
I liked that moment, and you know, her line, which it should sound cheesy as heck, but somehow she makes it work. I want to put my fists through this lousy, beautiful city, or however she actually phrases it. But it should sound, it should not work. And she somehow makes it work. And I still don't understand how she, I mean, well, besides acting, but I think it just worked for the character. And it, I appreciate it more and more every time I watch it.
Yeah, it, that earnestness in the delivery was just pure Rose. And that's the whole reason it works.
Yeah. Jay, any more final Canto Bite thoughts?
I mean, I have many, many Canto Bite thoughts, including more space yachts, please. But
and any more specific Rose Canto Bite thoughts? I don't want to cut you off too early.
I mean, that's okay. One last thing. I would have loved the fancy shopping scene just for Rose's reaction to having to be undercover, considering how much she hates the place. That could have been fun.
Yeah, I can't disagree with that.
You know, some,
but even better, we did get to see them wear First Order uniforms, which just made me delighted beyond measure. And I also want one of those really fancy irons that come down and do your uniform ironing for you, because ironing a First Order and Imperial uniform is not fun.
Somewhere there, I will agree with you. I would love an automatic space iron.
You know, I will say that somewhere out there is probably a piece of fan fiction in which there is an aborted attempt to go find fancy undercover disguises, and the only thing that thwarts them is they can't afford it.
Yes.
That is not where I thought you were going with that. That is not where I thought you were going with that at all.
Oh, really? Okay.
But if I continue, well, we're talking about the ironing sequence, you know, because they have to change. And fanfic, gonna fanfic.
Yeah, okay,
I just have a dirtier mind than both of you.
Yeah,
I was thinking he was just going to say they were going to get caught for having wrinkled uniforms, so I think you're on your own on that one.
Yeah, we're not AO3's explicit section right now.
I live in the dumpster. Okay, moving on. So they do the First Order infiltration, which goes pretty poorly. Although I still don't know how BB-8 in a trash can does not get them caught. Like, well, it does, but how does BB-8 in the trash can not get caught, too?
So
people don't notice droids.
I've got a thought on this. And yes. While DJ sells them out, he specifically leaves out the fact that BB-8 is there with them.
Hmm. So you think DJ is also in the BB-8 fan club?
Well, isn't everyone?
Valid. Yeah. Oh, hold on. Wait, I skipped a point that I wanted to talk about. I thought it was interesting that DJ just had the conversation about the weapons sellers to Finn and not to Rose. Do you think that she already basically knew what was going on and like Finn was the only one who needed to hear it?
Either that, or he can just tell that Finn is much more receptive to the whole don't join school of thought than Rose is.
Yeah, I figure Rose has to know what the arms manufacturers are doing, but she's committed to fight the First Order, whereas Finn is sort of not ideologically on really any side. He's basing his things on personal loyalties, and DJ's saying, look, they all suck.
Yeah, I can buy that. Okay, but going back forward to the First Order stuff. So they try to get in there, and they get so close, but then BB-90 is a hero and saves the day and stops them from getting into the room. Oh, wait, hold on. Sorry, that's my First Order talking. They get caught and Phasma enters very dramatically. That was a good entrance, actually. I'm sorry. I know this is about Rose, but Phasma had a good entrance.
So good to see you again.
Yeah. Jay, do you disagree?
Yeah, I am completely not a fan of the Phasma arc in this movie.
I was just trying to make you say nice things about Phasma because I know it would hurt you.
No, I will not. I will no longer say nice things about Phasma. That was a 2015 phase.
Well, I can definitely. I think we're all in agreement that her trying to, you know, execute our dear perfect Rose and Finn was not the best or the nicest thing to do.
Yeah, that was that was definitely a mean thing.
Yeah. Were you guys surprised that DJ sold them out?
Not in the slightest.
Do you think that Rose seemed surprised in a way, which kind of surprised me?
I mean, the first time I was actually really, really confused because I'd forgotten that they were wearing First Order uniforms, so I just saw him in a First Order hat, and I said, wait, Wesley been a First Order spy this whole time? So I was just really confused the first time, and that's my fault.
Yeah, I wasn't surprised that he sold them out. Find a guy in a holding cell in Canto Bight, and, well, don't be too surprised if he sells you out to save his own skin.
What about Rose, though? Because she seemed almost genuinely hurt that he would do that. Which that said a lot about her character in a way.
I think it does, yeah. Rose, she's a little like early Luke Skywalker in a way. Someone shows that they can be good, and she wants to keep believing that they can be good. And I think part of that is also driven by him returning the necklace to her. That was a gesture of goodwill, and to have him then turn them in, I'd be feeling pretty betrayed and hurt too.
Jay?
Yeah, I mean, she wanted to believe in him, and she thought they were very, very close to saving everyone. And I think it was doubly the fact that not only did he betray them, but she realized that it was going to cost everyone their lives too. I think that, you know, really, really hit her hard.
Yeah, that's a good point. Well, obviously they don't get executed, because I'm really a fan of them not losing their heads in a way that's going to hurt because of a combination of Holdo and BB-8, which didn't see that one coming.
Yeah, the Holdo thing with the light speed was awesome. The BB-8 thing was a little much.
What I found most striking about that scene personally was when she, you know, she gets the officer blaster or the stormtrooper blaster, and then she shoots at Phasma only for it to reflect off of her, but she doesn't really seem deterred, and she keeps trying to fight, and the only reason she has to dive behind cover is because someone's got a giant repeating blaster and tries to, you know, is shooting at her, which I was like, this is very brave for someone who spends her whole day hiding behind pipes.
Well, she's not hiding behind pipes, she's working
behind pipes, but she's not someone who's necessarily like on the front lines of, yeah, you know.
But she wanted to save Finn, and Finn was being attacked by Phasma, so she will shoot Phasma.
Brian?
I really like that moment too. She might just be a mechanic, just a cog in the system that's keeping the resistance going, but she's fearless. And really in that moment, she kind of embodies everything you come to expect from both the rebellion and the resistance, which is great to see from an Asian character, and I love it so much, and I'm so glad people got to see that.
Yeah, she's definitely a really, really big deal. Actually, I'm curious, what I was gonna save this for later, but what did your sister think?
She loves Rose to death.
Aww.
Yeah, it's pretty much the best.
That makes me really happy.
That warmed my heart.
So was she I guess she was pretty relieved that she made it through the dun 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 Battle of Crait then.
Yes, although there were definite freakout moments for her there.
I don't think anyone was calm at multiple points during this film.
I was gearing up to be really angry.
Yeah. So they get back to the Resistance, Battle of Crait. She's flying one of the what did they call them? The skimmers? Ski
something. I don't know.
Yeah,
rusty thing that's about
it,
to fall apart.
Rust buckets, yes. One of those rust buckets, and then she sees, you know, she's doing her best trying to fight against the First Order. She sees Finn ready to basically sacrifice himself, and then there was a very good chance that she could have killed herself doing that and saving Finn.
And she
I should point that out.
Finn, this is a sacrificial trope. We're not doing this in this movie. We have to change expectations. Stop it.
I will subvert this damn trope by flying into your skimmer. Now, stop it.
Now I wonder if Jeff really delivered one of those lines. That would have been great.
We do not do death as redemption here, damn it.
Yes, but we do also, however, make history in the Star Wars universe. I believe that was the first interracial kiss in Star Wars. Am I wrong?
Believe you're right.
Yeah, I think it would have to be.
Yeah, because I kept thinking, because Kelly was saying that there was a moment that her and John were filming where he kind of paused and looked at her and said, "Hey, we're making history here." And I can't help but think that has to be it.
That, I think that's what it was.
Yeah, so. That I keep thinking that's the scene.
Yeah. How did you guys feel about that? I mean, obviously it starts with the whole, that's how we're going to win, not fighting what we hate, saving what we love line, which is fabulous. But then, you know, she reaches up and just kisses him very briefly on the lips before passing out. So how did you guys feel about that whole scene?
I didn't read too much into the kiss because that was probably the most chaste kiss you will ever see on film. But for me, that was more of a gesture of affection rather than a gesture of love. And let's be honest, our poor buddy Finn needs gestures of affection pretty badly.
I mean, yeah, it was about the equivalent of Leia kissing Luke in A New Hope, you know, for luck. I mean, it was that kind of just like, you know, we survived this thing. And I think it's unfortunate that it's causing people to misread how she says saving what we love, because she has a bigger message there. And it's sort of disappointing to me that people are, I don't know if it's intentionally or just misreading it. It's really unfortunate. But I put the blame on the viewers rather than the filmmakers/writers for that one.
Yeah, it's like people forget that there's more kinds of love than romantic love. Like family love exists, platonic love between friends exists. There's a lot of love out there in the galaxy.
Yep.
Yeah, but. So I like that scene in seeing that kiss as something that's not a romantic gesture.
Although I'm not opposed if it turns into one.
Oh, yeah. Like
later down the line where we find out, you know, they get to know each other a little bit better and then they do end up being together. I'm not opposed to that.
No,
that's what happens in episode 9.
Neither am I. I just don't think that's what the intent of that scene was in this film.
Yeah, no, I agree with you completely. Jay, any more thoughts on that?
I just think it's a great line, and it's one of the reasons why I said earlier on that I was telling people that you should listen more to Rose. She's the one that's the most right in that movie. I think that line said it all.
Yeah. So we're pretty happy with how her character arc went then?
Absolutely.
Well, I guess she had slightly less of an arc than characters like Rey or Finn, but we're pretty happy with how her storyline went.
Absolutely.
I think so. I mean, she's, you know, she's a brand new character to Star Wars, and she got to play a huge, huge role and be important to the story. And I think that's almost as much as I could have hoped for.
I would absolutely agree with that. Obviously, it's going to be hard for a character like Rose to have the same amount of screen time and gravitas and significance when you've got a Rey storyline going on over there, a Kylo storyline going on over there, and Finn trying to figure out his place in the Resistance going on. But despite all that, I really feel like Rian Johnson carved out this wonderful story for Rose to just weave through the film. And it was way more than I ever dreamed we were going to get when that casting announcement was initially made.
Yeah, I was really happy to see that Rian Johnson was not kidding when he said that she had by far the biggest of the new roles. So that was nice. But actually, I want to kind of jump down to one of the questions we got from one of our listeners, or Brian, in your case, your wife. Nancy said, "I've seen people dislike Rose, Asian people included here, because she seems too stereotypical, awkward, mechanically inclined, kind of nerdy. Agree or disagree? And is this a valid criticism or more of the bad representation idea?"
That's a really good and also very difficult question to answer. I mean, I guess if you squint and look at it, it can look a little stereotypical, but awkward, mechanically inclined, kind of nerdy is, well, three descriptors that sums me up pretty well, so if she's too stereotypically Asian, then so am I.
I think also it depends on how a character is used in the story. Like Donnie Yen was talking about this with Rogue One, where he, you know, originally resisted the idea of playing in the movie, saying, "Oh, you want me to be a martial artist, right?" Once he realized, though, what kind of role his character would be playing and how Chirrut was, you know, spiritual and had this force wisdom going on, and how he was more than just sort of a visual gag, he was more excited about it. And I think Rose the same way. She's not just a tool to progress the story, and her stereotypical attributes aren't the sum of her character. She's actually, if anything, they're just sort of background material. That's just who she is. But she is her own individual character with her own individual personality.
Yeah, and plus, I think it's important to remember here that while the character of Rose likely evolved a little bit, or I think it definitely evolved a little bit, and Kelly Marie Tran, she put a lot of herself into it. And I think Rian Johnson said something about making the character more like Kelly, that the character was written and not written for any race in particular. Yeah. Like, I'm pretty sure it was open race blind casting. So, which to me kind of says it'd be hard for the character to read too stereotypical, when I know that we could have easily gotten a white girl, given, like Jay said before, the original concept of art of her was white, which in itself is a whole irritating issue that white has to be the default, but we won't go into that now.
Yeah. So I would say that if all she was awkward, mechanically inclined, and kind of nerdy, I would say that's a problem. But those are just pieces of her overall character and her overall arc. And I'm okay with those being pieces of a much deeper, more realized character.
Yeah, and I think it's kind of also a big deal that the character who we sort of talked about before is being the audience stand-in, and who we as an audience can kind of relate to more, that she's an Asian woman. She's not another white guy in space. It's an Asian woman, which is in itself a reasonably big deal.
Yeah, I agree. But I do think that just honing in on those character attributes and basing your entire judgment of that character on those things, I think it's a little missing the trees for the forest. I like that was part of her character. I can see why some people would feel differently, but for me, that's not the entirety of her.
Yeah. So you guys said you hadn't read Cobalt Squadron or Bomber Command, right?
I'm so far behind.
Well, there goes my excellent section on Rose and the supporting material of those two books and talking about her relationship with Paige.
So high level.
You guys didn't do the homework? Come on.
I know. I've been so swamped with
work. I didn't know there was going to be a quiz.
But what?
There is, Jay. You've shown up to class naked and there's a quiz and you don't know any of the answers. I'm so sorry.
Also, you've not been in class all semester.
But okay, so since I'm the only person who's read them, the one thing I'll say is I think Bomber Command in particular did a really good job of showing not only who Paige is, and at some point I think we definitely all want to talk about Paige a lot more on this show, maybe after you guys do the reading, but also her relationship with Rose and how throughout the two books you kind of see that Rose is very, it feels kind of dependent on her sister. She kind of has a little bit of hero worship for her, like, oh, Paige is so awesome, I could never be like that. And Paige just has this wonderful sense to her of acknowledging that her sister is like this, but knowing and believing in her and knowing that Rose is incredibly smart and that she can stand on her own. And it's this very nice, believable relationship between siblings that I definitely appreciated.
I definitely need to read this to compare to my experience growing up with siblings.
Read Bomber Command. Everyone read Bomber Command.
Jason's never let me down before, so I'm sure I'm going to enjoy it.
Jay, were you going to say something?
No, just because okay. I have books.
Sorry, Skype's being weird tonight. I keep hearing half bits, so... So yes. Anyone's listening to this, and I sound very strange with how I'm starting sentences. That's why. Sorry, guys.
Yeah, we're sorry. Skype has duplexing issues.
So I want to jump down to the questions we got from some of our listeners. Diana asked us, what were you happiest about with regards to Rose, and what do you wish we had gotten more of?
I wish we had more of her, but I totally get why there wasn't more of her. That was just one of the best shots, the best sequences in the movie, and the whole saga, really. And just the whole way it was shot, and just having, we're talking about Rose, not Pay, or Rose, not Paige. I'm so sorry. I'm so branded.
Ron Rose, sorry.
Sorry, I was on the wrong line, but I really liked the sequence with Paige at the beginning.
It was a very good sequence and made me cry a lot.
As for as for Rose, I keep going back to, I'm still just gobsmacked that she had as big of a part as she did in the film. I wish we'd gotten a little more of her background and her upbringing. I totally get why that wasn't in there though, but I'm having a hard time saying what I want more of, because I'm just so happy with her entire arc in the film.
Yeah, I have to agree. It's like it's hard to complain about Rose, because I mean, she had so many awesome scenes. Like the two lines we've talked about, her line about wanting to destroy Cantobite and then her line about saving what we love, were both very iconic, well delivered lines. And like, Kelly Marie Tran really knocked the character out of the park with her delivery and her exuberance and just playing the role that I almost feel sort of churlish saying that, oh, there's something else I would have wanted to get more of. I think we've gotten an amazing character with Rose.
I wish we had a standalone film with her. I guess that's what I wish we had.
or maybe more shots of that awesome ring and merchandise of that ring.
Typical Jay.
Jay.
I think the one thing I would have liked, but I don't think would have worked well for the film, I wish we had a scene of Rose and Paige together, because it would have been great to actually see the sisters interact before, you know, everything horrible happens to Paige. But at the same time, the opening of the film is so perfect that adding anything in there would have been a disservice to the film as a whole.
Yeah, that opening is paced so well that as much as I would have loved just a briefest of scenes with Rose and Paige interacting, I get why it's not there, and it's probably better for the film that it's not.
Yeah, and it's like it's hard because, you know, and we have a question related to this, but Paige dying is something that, in the abstract, if you told me, like, before the movie, I would have said this definitely shouldn't happen, and that would be really unfortunate. But the way they pulled it off sort of visually and the way that sequence worked, it's hard to say no to that. And I have to imagine they put that together even before they'd, you know, cast any of the characters or put any of this together.
Well, actually, just go ahead and jump down to Kate's question, where she asks us, when Rose and Paige were introduced, some people were afraid that Paige would die to further Rose's character development, which kind of did happen. And she asked us how we felt about that storytelling move. So I guess, Jay, you kind of answered that already. Brian, what's your take?
Yeah, I mean, I'm with Jay on this one. If you frame that to me in isolation before seeing the film, I would have been like, what the hell? I hate this. But things like that, it can really come down to execution. And if it's done well, if it's portrayed well, if it delivers the emotional resonance that you hope it should, then it's a good addition to the film and works for the story and works for Rose. So am I bummed that Paige was gone that fast? Yeah, I am a little bit. But on the other hand, how often do you see a woman of color have that kind of heroic a heroic sacrifice at the beginning of a film that is something that in universe, you know, people would be talking about for years. So I get the upset, but I also think it was supremely well executed.
I think it also makes a difference that her death affected her sister. So yes. It wasn't like, you know, Paige died and the person who was really upset about it was, you know, her white guy boyfriend.
Yeah. So it wasn't a death for man pain. Thank God.
Yeah. And also, after reading Cobalt Squadron and Bomber Command, what I kind of took away from both of those books was that Rose was never going to really be able to step out from her sister's shadow. Not because Paige didn't want her to, but because Rose had a little bit of I hate to say inferiority complex, but she just, I can't think of a better word for it, though. She just seemed very enamored with everything her sister did and thought of her sister as being the big hero that I'm not entirely sure that she would have gone with Finn and gone on this heroic mission if her sister had still been around.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
Although, alternatively, maybe Paige would have gone with them.
Yeah, it is possible. I mean, to me, it's a little bit of an old war movie trope, perhaps. But again, there's a bit of value in putting people in those tropes, which aren't necessarily bad, in those tropes that have never been in those tropes before.
And also, tropes are bad when they're sort of lazy places you go to because you can't think of anything better. If you use a trope really well, then that's totally fine. And I think we all agree that her Paige's sacrifice in the beginning was done really well, and the impact it had on Rose was done really well.
Yeah, I'd agree that the execution was nearly flawless, which is why it works for me.
Yeah, agreed. Okay, so Scott asks us, what do we like best about her in The Last Jedi, and is there anything that we wish they had done differently or better, which I think we sort of already answered when we were talking about Diana's first question. But to take things a little bit lighter, I really appreciate Diana's second question, which is, what do you think her reaction would be to the Falcon coming from her mechanic point of view?
I'm going to drop a swear here. What the ever-loving shit is this?
First, she would be like pinching herself that she was on the Millennium Falcon. Like, it would be, I think, like Rey's reaction in the last movie, but maybe even more intense. And then she would then sort of start noticing things like, wait, this doesn't go here. That doesn't go here. What's happening? Who put this together? None of this shit makes sense. This shouldn't even be flying.
Why is there a Porg in here?
Yeah, after the initial, holy crap, I'm on the Falcon, she would be horrified by its state of maintenance.
Although it's not really the Falcon's fault that it's been sitting on Jakku for how many years now?
Oh, let's be real here.
I mean,
even when
Han was in charge of it, though. I mean, come on.
Yeah, it wasn't in good shape when Han had it.
So I wanted to make sure we talked about the out-of-universe impact that Rose has had on a lot of fans, the three of us included, since we've kind of already touched on that. Kelly Marie Tran is a delight who must be protected, and so help me if I see fandom, any part of fandom, continue to be racist towards her or Rose, I will break something.
It might be your legs if you're not careful.
I mean,
just putting that out anything. There. Just putting that
but,
out.
I mean,
there.
I know I shouldn't be surprised that this is how people react, but also, come on, Star Wars fans, you're better than this.
We're disappointed.
Yeah, it's sort of hard to talk about this because it's not something that brings up the most polite of responses. But I mean, the sort of pettiness and vileness people have been putting on social media about Rose is not cool. And I think it's extra hurtful considering the impact she's had on people of Asian American background, and especially, I think, young girls in particular, who we've seen doing costumes and just, you know, posting photos, and it's not cool the way people are behaving.
Yeah. I mean, you don't have to like the character of Rose. Like, it's okay to like and dislike characters. I mean, I'm not gonna say that everyone has to love all the same characters, but I think it's just important that people, not necessarily listeners to our podcast, I'm sure you guys all have it, you know, you're all being excellent fans, but that people recognize that you can, if you're voicing dislike for a character, that you have to be careful in how you phrase it and make sure it's not coming off as being demeaning towards the people who do like her, or demeaning towards a character like this who has such a big legacy, or is going to have such a big legacy within the Star Wars universe.
Yeah, it's one thing to say that you don't like Rose Tico as a character. It's another thing entirely and totally not okay to phrase it as, I don't get why people like Rose Tico.
Or to compare her to Jar Jar.
Oh, yeah, oh F off.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't have time for that.
Do you want to switch to a happier note when we talk about that? Those absolutely delightful pictures of Kelly and Veronica with their Rose and Paige action figures, because that was the cutest thing I saw all Force Friday weekend.
Yeah, and you can just see it in their faces, this, oh my god, I can't believe this is real.
Yeah, the sheer delight in it's action figures of them, and you know, they were able, you know, they took photos of it, and I mean, even just for, I think, us as fans, also the fact that these action figures exist is sort of unreal, surreal to me too.
Do we all have Rose and Paige action figures? Because I definitely had to buy both of them.
They were
even
the
though I'm not even an action figure person.
They were the first two I picked up.
I'll admit they were two and three, but they were the other ones I bought. I feel like I should get partial credit there.
I mean, I also got a gigantic colossal porg in the same trip, so you know,
as one does.
I still can't believe you won that, Jay.
I don't know what to do with it. It's just sitting in my living room and spooking everyone that walks into my house.
Hey, can we talk
for Rose would totally love it.
Rose would. Can we talk for a second about that casting video? And
yes.
I thought about bringing this up earlier, but oh my God, that casting video was just distilled why we love Kelly Marie Tran.
Do you want to talk a little more about that in case someone listening hasn't seen it yet?
Yeah, so if you haven't seen the video, I think it was a little after The Last Jedi came out. The lovely folks with the StarWars.com media team released this behind-the-scenes video of Kelly Marie Tran right after she had red lines for one of the early auditions for Rose. And she's just like, oh my God, I can't believe that just happened. And then it cuts over to Rian Johnson, who looks over at Ron Bergman and is like, yeah, Kelly Marie Tran is exactly what I brought the Rose I wrote to life. And then it cuts to a line read with John Boyega, and you can just instantly, before they started shooting anything, see this great chemistry between those two, and you're just like, oh yeah, I can totally see why Rian went with Kelly Marie Tran.
I watched and I thought I had something in my eye because I just appeared to be crying a little bit.
It was great. And hey, Hollywood, this is why you don't specify race on a character like this, or specifically, you don't say default white. Yeah. Because
you write more characters specifically for diverse actors.
Yes, better way to phrase it. Write characters specifically for diverse actors, but you don't have to specify characters as white, because can you imagine if that had been done for Rose?
I would not have liked her as much.
Yeah. And yes, thank you. That was what I was trying to say, Bria, but I stumbled all over myself.
Sorry, my bad.
No, that's what I was trying to say.
Oh, okay. Sorry, Skype is doing that thing.
Oh yeah, we've got duplexing.
I'm getting like every other word right now. Yeah, sorry,
we've got duplexing issues. But yes, I am very glad that role wasn't done with the usual Hollywood thing where it specified a white actress, because I don't want to live in the timeline where someone other than Kelly Marie Tran was cast for the part.
And the worst part of that timeline is we wouldn't even know. We would have no inkling of what Rose we were missing.
God, right?
Yeah, or Kelly herself, who, again, is a delight. And every time I've seen her get emotional over Rose has just pulled at my heart. Like, I think we all watched at least a little bit of the live stream at the premiere. And Kelly was crying. Like she was so emotional about everything that she ended up crying. And I have never before in my life unironically said, "You're doing amazing, sweetie," because she really, really was. And at the premiere, there was actually a cosplayer dressed as Rose amongst there. And her reaction to seeing someone dressed as her essentially was so pure and sweet. And It was amazing. You know, I feel like she's always been so aware of the effect that she's going to have on fandom, because she met that first cosplayer at, I think it was D23, and then she sees the other one at the premiere. And it just means a lot to me that she seems to really get what Rose Tico means and what she means to the fandom.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's just another reason we love Kelly Marie Tran, and we are so happy she is a part of this Star Wars family now.
I really hope we get to see lots of little girls running around dressed as Paige and Rose at Halloween this year.
That would be wonderful.
Oh, yes, please. That would warm my heart so.
Yeah. I mean, can you believe that we actually now live in a world in which just from the films and the TV show, there are actually multiple options for little Asian girls who want to dress as this character and not be deemed like the Asian Rey or the Asian Leia.
Right. Like, you're not stuck with Balder Swan anymore.
Yeah. And like main characters too. And someone was telling me that two of her students are their sisters, and this was the film that really got them to love Star Wars, because they finally got to see themselves on the screen as one of the heroes.
I live for these moments, and I hope Star Wars continues to use its position of influence and ability to just print money hand over fist to keep using just its immense sphere of power to just keep putting more and more of these great roles on screen, so more and more people can finally see themselves in the movies.
Agreed, 100%. Okay, do you guys have any last thoughts about Rose, about Kelly? Anything else we want to share before we start wrapping this up?
Kelly and Rose are perfect cinnamon rolls, and I love them.
Yep, nothing to add.
Perfect cinnamon. It looks like a cinnamon roll is actually a cinnamon roll.
Yes.
So I cannot wait to see what they do with her in episode 9. And if she's not back in episode 9, I will riot. I think you guys will be with me.
Yeah. Yes, I will be right there with you, rioting in front of JJ's place.
Yes, excellent. I'm glad. Well, hopefully we will not have to do that. But just in case, there's a contingency plan.
Holding you to this, JJ.
So, okay. I think that wraps up our conversation about Rose Tico. And it turns out that when you write show notes a while ago, you leave placeholders in. So you're going to hear us pick live right now who we're talking about next episode. Guys, who do we want to talk about next episode? I think someone suggested maybe Baze or Churrit, or do you guys have any strong thoughts on this?
You know, we could actually just do an entire bit about Asian representation in Rogue One, and then we can do some subsequent episodes later to get more specific on characters. Or we can just choose off the air and say TBH for now.
Well, we could do that. Jay, any strong thoughts on who we should talk about next?
I mean, I'm up for doing all of them in Rogue One, or Bodhi, since he never seems to get like pop figures or anything. Giving Bodhi some love would be cool.
I kind of like that.
Yeah, I'm down with that.
All right. Hey, guys, we picked something. Join us for our next episode of the Kanji Cast, when we'll be talking about Bodhi Rook. So don't forget, if you have any questions for us to answer on our future episode or just want to chime in, you can tweet them to us via the Tosh Station Twitter account. Or if you are one of our Patreon subscribers, you can ask them to us in the Kanji Cast Slack.
And you can get
Brian,
in on
that's
the,
your cue.
Yeah, you can get in on the Patreon Slack at the $1 level. So that's all you have to kick in to get in on that. Yeah, let's outro here. This episode of the Kanji Cast has been brought to you by our Patreon subscribers. We are a part of the Tosche Station Network. On Twitter, you can find us with the handles Tosche_Station. I'm Lane Winry, LaneWinree. Jay is Admiral Jello. Bria is at Chaos Bria. We're on Facebook at the Tosche Station Network. You can find us on the Tosche Station Radio Mega Feed on the iTunes Store, Google Play, and Stitcher. And you can find our columns and news at Tosche-Station.net. Thanks for catching another episode. We'll see you all next month.